And what are you doing now to retrieve my groom? We have employed every police and military unit at our disposal. Not good enough! This time, he did flinch. Lavanna steadied her breathing. The Commonwealth has failed too many times with regards to Lynn Cinder. Beginning now, I will employ my own resources and tactics in finding her. My guards will need to review all your security footage from the past 48 hours.
The advisor clasped his hands behind his back.
We are happy to give you access to the security footage we have available. However, we are missing approximately 2 hours of footage that was compromised this afternoon by the security breach. She sneered. Fine. Bring me what you do have.
Thaumaturge Amory Park appeared in the doorway.
Your Majesty, if I may request a word with you in private.
With pleasure. She waved a hand at Con Torin. You're dismissed. But note that the incompetence of your security team will not be ignored. With no argument and another low bow, the advisor left. As soon as he was gone, Lavanna whipped the veil off her head and threw it onto the settee.
The young emperor has been kidnapped, and from his own palace. Earthens are pathetic. It's amazing they haven't already become extinct.
I do not disagree, Your Majesty. I trust Mr. Khan did not inform you of this evening's other interesting development.
What development?
Amory's eyes danced.
It appears that Dr. Sage Darnell is in this palace, trapped in a quarantine room in the research wing.
Sage Darnell? She paused. Daring to return after he assisted the escape of that wretched girl?
No doubt they've been working together, although I've been led to believe that Dr. Darnell won't be around for much longer. It appears he's contracted an unusual strain of letamosis, one that seems to be much faster acting than the common strain, and, of course, he is lunar.
Her pulse skipped. This did open up some interesting possibilities.
Take me to him, she said, sliding her true wedding ring back onto her finger.
The other, that would cement her to Emperor Kaito, she left behind.
I must warn you,
Amory said as she followed him into the corridor,
that the elevators throughout the palace are malfunctioning. We will be forced to take the stairs.
Earthens,
she growled, lifting the hem of her skirt. It was like traversing an endless labyrinth, but finally, they reached the research wing. A crowd of officials had gathered outside the lab, and Lavanna sneered to think that they'd intended to keep this from her. When Sage Darnell, like Lynn Cinder, was her problem to deal with, however it pleased her. As she entered the lab room, she slipped into the minds of the men and women around her and impressed a strong need to be elsewhere. The room was cleared within seconds, but for her and Amory. It was a crisp, chemical-smelling room, all bright lights and hard edges. And on the other side of a tinted window, Dr. Sage Darnell was laid out on a lab table, holding a gray cap against his stomach. With the exception of the security footage that showed him helping Lynn Cinder escape from prison, Lavanna hadn't seen him since he disappeared over a decade ago. Once, he had been one of her most promising scientists, making grand advances in the development of her lupine soldiers on an almost monthly basis. But time had not been kind to him. His face had become worn and wrinkled. He was balding, and what was left of his hair was tufted and gray. And then there was the disease. His reptilian skin was covered in bruise-like blotches and a rash that was bubbling up like blisters, piling on top of each other. His fingertips had already begun to turn blue. No, he would not be around much longer. Lavanna floated toward the window. A light was on beside a microphone, indicating that communication was open between the two rooms.
My good Dr. Darnell, I did not think I would ever again have the pleasure.
His eyes opened, still fervently blue behind his spectacles. His attention was locked on the ceiling, and though it occurred to Lavanna that this was no doubt a one-way window, it annoyed her that he wouldn't bother to face her.
"Your Majesty," he said, his tone brittle, "I thought I might hear your voice one more time."
Beside her, Amory checked a port screen at his belt and excused himself with a low bow.
"I must say, I'm delighted with this irony. You left an honorable position on Luna to come to Earth and devote your last withering years to finding a cure for this disease. A disease that I already have the antidote for. In fact, come to think of it, I might have some samples with me in the palace. I like to keep them on hand in the event something tragic should happen to my betrothed or someone else necessary to my objectives. I could have the antidote brought to you, but I don't suppose I will."
"Worry not, my queen. I would not take it from you, even if you did, now that I know what lengths you've gone to obtain it."
"The lengths I've gone to, in order to cure a disease that, until this day, did not affect my own people? I do believe that's rather charitable of me, wouldn't you say?"
He slowly, slowly sat up. His head fell to his chest as he tried to recapture his breath, winded from that small exertion.
"I figured it out, my queen. I truly believed that all shells were killed when you took them from us. But that's not true. Are any of them killed? Or is it all just a show? A means of putting them into seclusion and harvesting their blood without anyone coming to look for them?"
Her lashes fluttered.
"You had a shell child once, didn't you? Remind me, was it a little boy or a little girl? Perhaps when I return home I can find them and tell them how small and pathetic their father was when he died, right before my eyes."
"What is most interesting to me,"
the doctor said, scratching his ear and acting as if he hadn't heard her,
"is that the first documented case of lethemosis occurred 12 years ago, and yet you've been collecting antibodies for much longer than that. In fact, it would have been your sister who began the experiments, if my math is correct."
Lavanna splayed her fingers on the counter.
"You have reminded me why you were such a terrible loss for our team, doctor."
He swiped his arm across his damp forehead. His skin seemed translucent beneath the bright lights.
"This disease is all your doing. You've manufactured death to bring Earth to its knees, so that when the time was right, you would be there to save them with your miraculous antidote. One that you'd had stashed away all along."
"You give me too much credit. It was the team working beneath my parents that created the disease, and those beneath my sister who perfected the antidote. I simply implemented their research by determining a means of getting the disease down to Earth.
By exposing Lunars to it and then sending them here, having no idea what they were carrying?"
"Sending them to Earth? Absolutely not. I simply made sure that my security personnel looked the other way when they escaped." The last word held a bite. She wasn't fond of the idea that some of her people chose to run away from the paradise she'd given them.
"It's biological warfare."
Dr. Darnell coughed into his elbow, leaving spots of dark red.
"And Earth has no idea."
"And they will continue to have no idea, because I'm going to stand here and watch you die."
He laughed shrilly.
"You honestly think I would carry this secret to my grave?"
A twinge of annoyance traipsed down her spine. The doctor's eyes were glazing over, but his smile was enormous as he studied the window.
"This is a very large mirror I'm looking into. So impossible to hide from what I am, what I've become. My queen, you would not like to die in this room. I suspect you would tear off your own flesh if forced to stare at it for so long.
She squeezed her hands into fists, digging her nails into the palms of her hands.
Your Majesty.
Exhaling, she forced her hands to open. Her palms stung. Amory had returned with Jericho, her captain of the guard, looking as though he'd been in an impressive scuffle. Jericho bowed.
My queen, Thaumaturge Mira and I, along with 5 of my top marksmen, managed to surround Lynn Cinder and her companions on the emergency landing pad on this tower's rooftop.
Hope warmed her chest.
And you got them? They haven't escaped after all?
No, Your Majesty. We failed in our objective. 2 of my men are dead, and the other 3 severely injured. I myself was unconscious when the spacecraft escaped with the traitors and the Emperor Kaito aboard.
Her fury began to claw at her spine again, desperate to be unleashed.
And where is Thaumaturge Mira?
He respectfully lowered his gaze.
Dead, Your Majesty. Lynn Cinder used her gift to torture her mind. I heard her screams myself. Those who were conscious have reported that, after the spacecraft departed, Thaumaturge Mira threw herself from the rooftop. Her body was found in the gardens.
A mad giggling echoed through the room. Lavanna spun back as the doctor doubled over his knees, kicking his heels against the table.
She deserved it, the snake. After keeping my little golden bird locked up in her cage for so long.
Your Majesty,
Lavanna faced Jericho again.
What?
We've found one of Lynn Cinder's accomplices aboard their ship prior to the confrontation. Her new pilot, it would seem.
Jericho gestured toward the hall. Footsteps clicked, and a moment later, 2 men entered. Another guard escorting. Her smile was quick.
Dearest Sir Clay.
Though his wrists were bound behind his back, he stood straight and proper and seemed as healthy as ever. He clearly hadn't been treated like a prisoner aboard Lynn Cinder's ship.
My queen, he dipped his head.
She scraped her lunar gift over him, testing for signs of derision or rebellion, but there were none. He was as blank and malleable as ever.
My understanding is that you abandoned your thaumaturge in a pivotal battle in order to side with Lynn Cinder against the Lunar Crown. Your being here leads me to understand that you are also involved with the kidnapping of my betrothed. You are a traitor to myself and to my throne. How do you plead?
Innocent, my queen.
She laughed.
Of course you are. How can you plead thus?
He held her gaze without remorse.
During the battle aboard the spaceship, Thaumaturge Mira was consumed with the effort to control a lunar special operative who has joined the side of the rebels. With my own faculties open, Lynn Cinder forced me to comply with her will and fight against my thaumaturge, ultimately leading to her abandoning the ship and leaving me aboard. Realizing this was an opportunity to ingratiate myself to the rebels, I have spent the past weeks acting as a spy with the intention of reporting weaknesses and strategies when I was finally able to return to my queen, who I am most honored to serve.
She smirked. No doubt your eagerness to return encompassed a desire to see your beloved princess as well. There, finally, the tiniest ripple of emotion before the lake was once again still as glass.
I live to serve all members of the Lunar Royal Family, my queen.
She smoothed her fingers down her skirt.
How can I believe that you remain loyal to me when you are standing before me in chains, having been dragged from the enemy's own ship?
I would hope my actions prove my loyalties. Had I wanted Lynn Cinder to succeed in her objectives, I would not have sent Thaumaturge Mira a comm informing her where and when I would be arriving with that ship.
Lavanna raked her gaze over Jason before glancing at Jericho.
Is this true? I can't say. Thaumaturge Mira did seem confident of the location when we went to intercept the traitors, but she didn't say anything about a comm, and she seemed furious when we found Jason in the cockpit. It was under her order that we took him into custody.
All due respect, said Jason. I did shoot her during our last engagement, and the comm was sent anonymously. She may not have realized I was the one who sent the tip in the first place.
Lavanna waved away the statement. We will investigate further, Sir Clay. But as you claim to have been gathering information for weeks, tell me, what useful things have you learned about our enemies?
I've learned that Lynn Cinder has the ability to control a lunar special operative, he said, reciting the information with as much emotion as an earthen android. However, she is untrained and lacks focus. She shows no talent for simultaneously engaging in both mental and physical battles.
Interesting speculation, Lavanna mused. In your estimation, would she have the mental focus required to torture an enemy, driving them to the brink of insanity?
Absolutely not, Your Majesty.
Absolutely not. Well then, you are either much stupider than I ever suspected, or you are lying, as that is precisely what Lynn Cinder did today against my head thaumaturge herself.
Another spike of emotion announced a sudden bout of nerves, but it was overshadowed by a loud thumping from the quarantine.
Of course he's lying,
the doctor screeched, his voice breaking. He had managed to haul himself off the lab table and was now pounding on the glass with his palms, leaving smears of bloodied spittle.
She's capable of killing your head thaumaturge and all your guards and your entire court. She's Princess Selene, the true heir to the throne. She can kill you all, and she will kill you all. She's coming for you, my queen, and she will destroy you.
Lavanna snarled.
Shut up! Shut up, you old man! Why won't you die already?
He was too busy gasping for breath to hear her. He collapsed to the ground, hands on his chest, his wheezing punctuated with hacking coughs. Jason Clay, when she turned back to him, was staring skeptically at the window. But within moments, his eyes began to fill with comprehension. His lips twitched, like he was ready to laugh at a joke he just now understood. It was a rare show of emotion that only angered her more.
Take him away. He will undergo a full investigation on Luna.
As Jason was marched back into the corridor, she faced Thaumaturge Park again, her hands fisted at her sides.
You are hereby promoted.
Begin planning our departure immediately, and alert our research team to this new strain of letamosis. Also, initiate mobilizing procedures for our soldiers. Lynn Cinder is too afraid to face me herself. The people of Earth will suffer for her cowardice.
You understand that with the loss of Thaumaturge Mira's programmer, we are not able to transport our ships to Earth without notice.
What do I care if Earth sees them coming? I hope it gives them time to beg for mercy before we destroy them.
Amory bowed.
I will see it done, Your Majesty.
Lavanna glanced back to see that Dr. Sage Darnell was sprawled out on the floor, his body seizing between his coughs. She watched him writhe and jerk, her blood still boiling at his words. As far as the people of Luna and Earth knew, Selene had died 13 years ago. Lavanna was going to make sure it stayed that way.
She was the rightful queen of Luna, of Earth, of the entire galaxy. No one would take that from her.
Seething, she stepped closer, close enough that she could see the trail of tears left on the doctor's scourged face.
Sweet crescent moon,
he whispered, his lips barely able to form the words. He began to shiver.
Up in the sky.
He hummed a few bars of a song, a lullaby that seemed barely familiar.
You sing your song so sweetly. After sunshine passes.
The last word hovered unspoken as he stopped shuddering and lay still, his blue eyes staring upward like empty marbles.
Chapter 57. Satellite AR-817.3. Deflect tracker. Set alternating timer. And check.
Which should just leave satellite AR-944.1. And that should do it.
Cress paused, breathed, and slowly lifted her fingers away from the cockpit's main screen, where she'd spent the last 3 hours ensuring that any satellites in their path would be conveniently turned away from them as they passed. As long as the Rampian's orbital path held, they shouldn't be detected. At least, not by satellite or radar.
There was still the problem of visual sightings, and as the Eastern Commonwealth had announced 20 minutes ago that an enormous monetary reward would go to anyone who found the stolen Rampian, every ship between here and Mars would be on the lookout. They had to be prepared to run if anyone did spot them, which was made extra difficult now that they no longer had a trained pilot on board. At least, not one who could see. Thorne had managed to talk Cinder through the liftoff procedures, with vast amounts of help from the Rampian's new auto-control system. But it had been a rocky takeoff, followed by an immediate switch to neutral orbit. If they were faced with anything requiring more complicated maneuvers before Thorne got his eyesight back, they'd be in trouble. According to Cinder, they'd be in trouble even when he did have his eyesight back. Cress massaged her neck, attempting to get her thoughts to stop spinning. When she was in the middle of a hack, it tended to fill up her brain until her vision hummed with coding and mathematics, skipping ahead to each necessary task faster than she could complete them. It tended to leave her in a state of drained euphoria. But for now, at least the Rampian was safe. She turned her attention to a yellow light at the base of the screen that had been annoying her since she'd begun, but that she'd been too preoccupied to deal with. As expected, when she prompted the ejection, a small, shimmering decom chip popped out from the screen. The match to the chip that Sybil had taken from her satellite, cutting off any hope that Cress and Thorne had of contacting their friends. Friends. She squinted at the chip as she held it up, wondering if that was the right word. It felt like having friends, especially after they'd survived the mission together. But then, she didn't have anything to compare this friendship to. One thing she knew for sure, though, was that she no longer needed to be rescued. She looked around for something she could use to destroy the chip and caught the ghost of a reflection in the cockpit window. Thorne stood in the doorway, behind her, hands tucked into his pockets. She gasped and spun to face him, her full skirt twisting around the chair's base. Though it was dirty and torn in places, she hadn't had the time to change yet and wasn't entirely sure she wanted to. The gown made her feel like she was still living in a drama and was perhaps keeping her from going into shock at all that had happened that day.
"You scared me."
Thorne flashed a moderately embarrassed grin.
"Sorry? How long have you been standing there?"
He shrugged. "I was listening to you work. It's kind of relaxing. And I like it when you sing." She flushed. She didn't realize she'd been singing. Feeling his way forward, Thorne took the co-pilot's seat, setting the cane across his lap and kicking his boots up on the dash. "Are we invisible again?"
"To radars, for now." She tucked some hair behind her ear. "Could I see your cane?"
He raised an eyebrow but handed it to her without question. Cress dropped the decom chip to the ground and crushed it beneath the cane's tip. A shiver of empowerment ran through her.
"What was that?" Thorne asked.
"The decom chip you used to contact me before. We won't be needing it again."
"Seems like that was ages ago."
Thorne ran his finger along the blindfold.
"I'm sorry that you didn't get to see much of Earth while we were down there, and now you're stuck up here again."
"I'm happy to be stuck up here."
She twirled the cane absently between her palms.
"It's a great ship, far more spacious than the satellite. And much better company."
"I can't argue with that."
Grinning, Thorne pulled a small bottle from his pocket.
"I came in here to ask if you would help me with this. These are the mystical eye drops the doctor made. We're supposed to put 3 to 4 drops in each eye twice a day. Or was it 2 drops, 3 times? I don't remember."
He wrote down the instructions on the port screen.
Thorne unclipped the port from his belt and handed it to her. Cress propped the cane against the panel of instruments.
"He was probably worried you'd forget after such a high stress."
She trailed off, her eye catching on the port screen text. Thorne cocked his head.
"What's wrong?"
The port had opened to a screen containing instructions for the eye drops and also a detailed account of why Dr. Erland believed the plague was a manufactured weapon being used as biological warfare. But at the top of all that,
"There's a tab labeled with my name."
Not Cress.
Crescent Moon Darnell.
"Oh,
It was the doctor's port. Cress's fingers glided over the screen, and she'd opened the tab before her mind could decide whether it wanted to know what was in it or not.
A DNA analysis, she said, and a paternity confirmation.
Standing, she set the port on the control panel. Let's do your eye drops.
Cress, he reached for her, his fingers gathering up the folds of her skirt.
Are you all right?
Not really. She looked down at him. Thorn had pulled the blindfold around his neck, revealing a faint tan line around his eyes. Gulping, Cress sank into the pilot's chair again.
I should have told him I loved him. He was dying, and he was right there, and I knew I would never see him again, but I couldn't say it. Am I horrible?
Of course not. He may have been your biological father, but you still barely knew him. How could you have loved him?
Does it matter? He said he loved me. He was dying, and now he's gone, and I'll never—
Cress, hey, stop it.
Thorn swiveled his chair to face her. He found her wrists before sliding his hands down to intertwine with her fingers.
You didn't do anything wrong. It all happened so fast, and there was nothing you could do.
She bit her lip.
He took my blood sample that first day in Farafra.
She squeezed her eyes shut.
He knew all this time, almost a whole week. Why didn't he tell me sooner?
He probably wanted to wait for the right time. He didn't know he was going to die.
He knew there was a chance we were all going to die.
Her next breath shook inside her diaphragm, and as the tears started, she felt herself being pulled toward Thorn. He drew her into his lap, scooping one arm beneath her legs to keep the enormous skirt from tangling around her. Sobbing, Cress buried her face against his chest and let the tears come. She cried hard at first, the release pouring out of her all at once. But she almost felt guilty when, minutes later, the tears already started to dry up. Her sadness wasn't enough. Her mourning wasn't enough. But it was all she had. Thorn held her until the sound of his heartbeat became louder than the sound of her crying. He smoothed her hair back from her face. And though it was selfish, Cress was glad that he couldn't see her then, with her red face and puffy eyes and all the unladylike fluids she'd left on his shirt.
Listen, Cress, he murmured against her hair once her breaths were almost stable. I'm not an expert by any means, but I know you didn't do anything wrong today. You shouldn't tell someone you love them unless you mean it.
She sniffed.
But I thought you said you've told lots of girls that you loved them.
Which is exactly why I'm not an expert. Thing is, I didn't love any of them. I'm honestly not sure I would recognize real love if it was...
She swiped the back of her hand over her damp cheeks.
If it was what?
Nothing.
Clearing his throat, Thorn leaned his head against the back of the chair.
Are you all right?
Sniffing again, she nodded.
I think so. I might still be in a little bit of shock.
I think we all are, after today.
Cress spotted the bottle of the eyedropper solution beside the doctor's port screen. She didn't want to pry herself away from Thorne's arms, but she also didn't want to think about the doctor anymore, the secret he'd kept, the words she couldn't say.
We should probably take care of these eyedrops.
When you're done shaking, Thorn said. I don't like shaking things near my eyes.
She laughed weakly and went to pull herself from his lap. Thorn's arms tightened, but only for a moment before he let her go. She forced her guilt back inside. She wouldn't think about it right now. After reading the doctor's instructions, 3 drops in each eye, 4 times a day for 1 week, she unscrewed the top. Drawing the solution up into the dropper, she moved to stand behind Thorn's chair, her wrinkled gown swaying around her. Thorn propped his feet on the control panel again and tilted back until his face was turned up to the ceiling. She hadn't seen his eyes in days, but they were as blue as ever. Cress placed a hand on his brow to steady herself, and his cheek twitched.
Here goes,
she murmured, squeezing the dropper. He instinctively flinched and blinked, pushing the drops like tears down his temples. Cress brushed them away, unable to resist smoothing a strand of hair off his forehead. Her attention caught on his lips, and suddenly, self-conscious, she pulled her fingertips away.
How does that feel?
He squeezed his eyes shut for a moment.
Like I have water in my eyes?
Then he chuckled wryly, opening them again.
Maybe the solution is just water and the doctor was playing a practical joke on me.
That would be awful, she said, twisting the cap back onto the solution. He wouldn't have done that.
No, you're right. Not after what we went through to get it.
He lifted his head from the back of the chair, tugging at the bandana knotted around his neck.
Though, he did make it pretty clear that he didn't think too highly of me.
If that's true, it's only because he didn't know you well enough yet.
True, I would have charmed him eventually.
She smiled.
Of course you would have, in addition to showing him your many other fine qualities, she said,
blushing as she set a reminder on the port screen to go off 4 times a day. But when she looked at Thorne again, his expression had become serious.
Captain?
His Adam's apple bobbed. Sitting up straighter, Thorne rubbed his palms together.
I have to tell you something.
Oh?
Hope skittered through her veins as she claimed the pilot seat again. The luxurious dress poofed around her. The rooftop. The kiss. Had he realized how much he loved her?
What is it?
Thorne pulled his feet off the control panel.
Remember when we were in the desert, and I said I didn't want to hurt you because you were wrong about me?
She nodded her fingers together.
When you tried to deny how much of a hero you really are?
She tried to put a hint of teasing into the statement, but her nerves were so jittery it came out as more of a frightened squeak.
A hero.
Exactly. Thorne rubbed a finger between the blindfold and his throat, loosening it.
Here's the thing. That girl I stood up for when those jerks took her port screen?
Kate Fallow?
Right, Kate Fallow. Well, she was really good at math, and at the time I was failing.
The anticipation fluttering through her body turned to ice. Wait, was this his confession? Something to do with Kate Fallow? He cleared his throat when she didn't say anything.
I lost the fight and all, but she still let me copy her homework for a month. That's why I did it, not out of a misplaced desire to be heroic.
But you said you had a crush on her.
Cress, he smiled, but it looked strained. I had a crush on every girl. Believe me, it wasn't a big motivator.
She squeezed back against the chair and pulled her knees to her chest.
Why are you telling this to me now?
I couldn't before. You were so certain that I was this other person, and I kind of liked that you saw me differently than anyone else. Part of me kept thinking that maybe you'd been right all along and it's everyone else who'd been wrong about me. That even I've been wrong about me. He shrugged. But even that was just my ego talking, wasn't it? And you deserve to know the truth.
And you think my entire opinion of you was based on one incident that happened when you were 13 years old?
His brow knitted.
I'd thought I'd done a pretty good job of clarifying all those other incidents, but if you have more, by all means, let me ruin those for you, too.
She bit her lip. The rooftop. The kiss. He'd kept his promise. He'd given her a kiss worth waiting for because she was about to die. They were both about to die. She knew it had been a risk, and probably a stupid one. And that was the choice he'd made, rather than let her die without experiencing that one perfect moment. She could think of nothing more heroic. So why wouldn't he mention it? Perhaps, more important, why couldn't she?
No, she whispered finally. I guess I can't think of anything else.
He nodded, though his expression was disappointed.
So, given all this new information, you, probably don't think you're still in love with me, do you?
She shrank into her chair, sure that if he could see her now, he would know. The truth would be evident in every angle of her face.
She loved him more than ever. And not because she scoured file after file of reports and summaries and data and photographs. Not because he was the dreamy, untouchable Carswell Thorne that she'd imagined kissing on the banks of a starlit river while fireworks exploded overhead and violins played in the background. Now, he was the Carswell Thorne who had given her strength in the desert, who had come for her when she was kidnapped, who had kissed her when hope was lost and death was imminent. Thorne awkwardly scratched his ear.
That's what I thought. I figured it was just the fever talking anyway.
Her heart twisted. Captain? He perked up.
Yeah?
She picked at the chiffon overlay of her skirt. Do you think it was destiny that brought us together? He squinted and, after a thoughtful moment, shook his head.
No, I'm pretty sure it was Cinder. Why?
I guess I have a confession, too. She pressed the skirt down around her legs, her face already burning. I had a crush on you before we even met, just from seeing you on the net screens. I used to believe that you and I were destined to be together someday and that we would have this great, epic romance. One eyebrow ticked upward.
Wow. No pressure or anything.
She squirmed. Her body was vibrating with nerves. I know. I'm sorry. I think you might be right, though. Maybe there isn't such a thing as fate. Maybe it's just the opportunities we're given and what we do with them. I'm beginning to think that maybe great epic romances don't just happen. We have to make them ourselves. Thorne shuffled his feet.
You know, if it was a bad kiss, you could just say so.
She stiffened. That's not at all what I... Wait, did you think it was a bad kiss?
No, he said with an abrupt, clumsy laugh. I thought it was,
he cleared his throat.
But there were clearly a lot of expectations and a lot of pressure and...
He squirmed in the chair.
We were going to die, you know.
I know, she squeezed her knees into her chest. And no, it wasn't... I didn't think it was a bad kiss.
Oh, thank the stars.
His head fell back against the chair.
Because if I'd ruined that for you, I was going to feel like such a cad.
Well, don't. It met every expectation. I suppose I should thank you? The discomfort melted from his features, and she was jealous as her blush stayed burning hot. Thorne held a hand out toward her, and it took every ounce of the courage she'd earned that day to tuck her hand into his.
Believe me, Cress, the pleasure was all mine.
Chapter 58. She dreamed that she was being chased by an enormous white wolf, its fangs bared and its eyes flashing beneath a full moon. She was running through crops thick with mud that sucked at her toes, her breath forming clouds of steam. Her throat stung. Her legs burned. She ran as fast as she could, but her body became heavier with every step. The shriveled leaves of sugar beets turned rotten and brittle under her. She spotted a house in the distance. Her house. The farmhouse her grandmother had raised her in, the windows beaming with warmth. The house was safety. The house was home. But it receded into the distance with each painful step. The air around her became thick with fog, and the house disappeared altogether, swallowed whole by the encroaching shadows. She tripped, landing on her hands and knees. She rolled over, scrambling and kicking at the ground. Mud clung to her clothes and hair. The coldness from the ground soaked into her bones. The wolf prowled closer. Its lean muscles moved gracefully under the coat of fur. It snarled, eyes lit with hunger. Her fingers fished around on the ground, searching for a weapon, anything. They struck something smooth and hard,
She grasped it and pulled it from the squelching mud. An axe, its sharp blade glistening with moonlight. The wolf leaped, gaping jaws unhinged. Scarlet lifted the axe, bracing herself, swung. The blade cut clean through the beast, cutting it into two pieces from head to tail. Warm blood spattered over Scarlet's face as the two wolf halves landed on either side of her. Her stomach roiled. She was going to throw up. She dropped the axe and collapsed back on the ground. The mud squished around her ears. Overhead, the moon filled up the whole sky. Then, the wolf halves began to rustle. They gradually rose up, now only the soft outer pelt of the beast, shorn in two. Scarlet could make out vague human-like shapes standing over her, each wearing half of the snow-white pelt. The fog cleared and Wolf and her grand-mère were before her, holding their arms out, welcoming her home. Scarlet gasped, her eyes flew open. She was met with the sight of steel bars, the earthy smell of ferns and moss, and the clatter of 1,000 birds, some trapped in their own elaborate cages, others flocked in the tree branches that entwined around the enormous beams supporting the glass ceiling. A wolf yipped, sounding both sorrowful and concerned. Scarlet forced herself onto an elbow so she could see the barred enclosure on the other side of the pathway. The white wolf was sitting there watching her. He howled, just a short, curious sound, not the haunting howls that Scarlet heard in her dreams. She imagined he was asking if she was all right. She might have been screaming or thrashing during the nightmare, and the wolf's pale yellow eyes blinked with worry. Scarlet tried to gulp, but her mouth was parched, her saliva too thick. She must be going crazy to be carrying on silent conversations with wolves.
"He likes you."
Gasping, Scarlet flipped onto her back. A stranger, a girl, was sitting cross-legged in her cage, so close Scarlet could have touched her. Scarlet tried to push herself away, but the action sent pain rippling through her bandaged hand. She hissed and fell back onto the ground. Her hand was the worst of it. The hatchet had taken her left pinky finger to the second knuckle. She had not passed out, though she wished she would have. A lunar doctor had been waiting to bandage the wound, and had done it with such precision, Scarlet suspected it was a very common procedure. But then, there were also the scratches on her face and stomach from her time spent in the company of Master Charlson, and countless aches from sleeping on hard floors for, well, she'd lost count of how many nights. The girl's only reaction to Scarlet's grimace was a long, slow blink. Clearly, the girl was not another prisoner, or pet, as the extravagantly dressed lunars called Scarlet when they passed by her cage, giggling and pointing and making loud remarks on whether or not it was safe to feed the animals. The girl's clothing was the first indication of her status. A gauzy, silver-white dress that had settled around her shoulders and thighs like snowflakes might settle on a sleepy hillside. Her warm brown skin was flawless and healthy, her fingernails perfectly shaped and clean. Her eyes were bright, the color of melted caramel, but with hints of slate gray around her pupils. On top of all that, she had silky black hair that curled into perfect spirals, neatly framing her high cheekbones and ruby red lips. She was the most beautiful human being Scarlet had ever seen. Yet, there was one anomaly. Or three. The right side of the girl's face was marred by three scars that cut down her cheek from the corner of her eye to her jaw, like perpetual tears. Strangely, the flaws on her skin didn't reduce her beauty, but almost accentuated it. Almost compelled a person to stare at her longer, unable to peel their eyes away. It was with this thought that Scarlet realized it was a glamour, which meant this was another trick. Her expression changed from awestruck and blushing, she despised that she was actually blushing, to resentful. The girl blinked again, drawing attention to her impossibly long, impossibly thick eyelashes.
"Ryu and I are confused," she said. "Was it a very bad dream or a very good one?"
Scarlet scowled. The dream had already begun to wisp away, as dreams do, but the question reignited the memory of Wolf and her grandmother before her, alive and safe. Which was a cruel joke. Her grandmother was dead, and last she'd seen Wolf, he'd been under the control of a thaumaturge.
Who are you? And who's Ryu?
The girl smiled. It was both warm and conspiratorial, and it made Scarlet shiver. Stupid lunars and their stupid glamours.
Ryu is the wolf, silly. You've been neighbors for 4 days now, you know. I'm surprised he hasn't officially introduced himself.
Then she leaned forward, dropping her voice to a whisper as if she were about to share a closely guarded secret.
As for me, I am your new best friend, but don't tell anyone, because they all think that I'm your master now and that you are my pet. They don't know that my pets are really my dearest friends. We shall fool them all, you and I.
Scarlet squinted at her. She recognized the girl's voice now, the way she danced through her sentences like each word had to be coaxed off her tongue. This was the girl who had spoken during Scarlet's interrogation. The girl reached for a strand of filthy hair that had fallen across Scarlet's cheek. Scarlet tensed.
Your hair is like burning. Does it smell like smoke?
Bending over, the girl pressed the hair against her nose and inhaled.
Not at all. That's good. I wouldn't want you to catch fire.
The girl sat up just as suddenly, pulling a basket toward her that Scarlet hadn't noticed before. It looked like a picnic basket, lined with the same silvery material as her dress.
I thought today we could play doctor and patient. You'll be the patient.
She removed a device from the basket and pressed it against Scarlet's forehead. It beeped, and she checked the small screen.
You're not running a fever. Here, let me check your tonsils.
She held a thin piece of plastic toward Scarlet's mouth. Scarlet knocked her away with her uninjured hand and forced herself to sit up.
You're not a doctor.
No, that's why it's pretend. Aren't you having fun?
Fun? I've been mentally and physically tortured for days. I'm starving. I'm thirsty. I'm being kept in a cage in a zoo.
Menagerie.
And I hurt in places that I didn't know my body even had. And now some crazy person comes in here and is trying to act like we're good pals, playing a raucous game of make-believe? Well, no, sorry, I'm not having any fun, and I'm not buying whatever chummy trick you're trying to play on me.
The girl's big eyes were blank, neither surprised nor offended by Scarlet's outburst. But then she glanced out towards the pathway that wound between the cages, overgrown with exotic flowers and trees to suggest some semblance of being in a lush jungle. A guard was standing at the pathway's bend, scowling. Scarlet recognized him. He was one of the guards that regularly brought her bread and water. He was the one who had grabbed her rear end the first time she'd been thrown into this cage. At the time, she'd been too exhausted to do anything more than stumble away from him. But if she ever had the chance, she would break every one of his fingers in retaliation.
We're all right, the girl said, smiling brightly. We're pretending that I cut off her hair and glued it to my head because I wanted to be a candlestick, and she didn't like that.
While she spoke, the guard's glare never left Scarlet, only narrowed in warning. After a long moment, he meandered away. When his footsteps had faded, the girl pulled the basket onto her lap and rifled through it.
You shouldn't call me crazy. They don't like that.
Scarlet faced her again, her gaze dragging down the raised scar tissue on her cheek.
But you are crazy.
I know.
She lifted a small box from the basket.
Do you know how I know?
Scarlet didn't answer.
Because the palace walls have been bleeding for years, and no one else sees it.
She shrugged, as if this were a perfectly normal thing to say.
No one believes me, but in some corridors, the blood has gotten so thick, there's nowhere safe to step. When I have to pass through those places, I leave a trail of bloody footprints for the rest of the day.
And then I worry that the Queen's soldiers will follow the scent and eat me up while I'm sleeping. Some nights I don't sleep very well.
Her voice dropped to a haunted whisper, her eyes taking on a brittle luminescence.
But if the blood was real, the servants would clean it up, don't you think?
Scarlet shivered. This girl really was crazy.
This is for you, she said, astoundingly bright once again. Doctor's orders are to take one pill twice a day, she tilted toward Scarlet.
They wouldn't let me bring you real medication, of course, so it's just candy.
Then she winked, and Scarlet couldn't tell if the wink was to indicate that the box contained candy or not. I'm not going to eat it. The girl listed her head.
Why not? It's a gift to cement our forever friendship.
She pulled the lid off the box, revealing four small candies nestled in a bed of spun sugar. They were round as marbles and bright glossy red.
Sour apple petites, my personal favorites. Please, take one.
What do you want from me?
Her lashes fluttered.
I want us to be friends.
And all your friendships are based on lies? Wait, of course they are. You're lunar.
For the first time, the girl deflated a little.
I've only ever had two friends,
she said, then glanced quickly at the wolf. Ryu had lain down, resting his head on his paws as he watched them.
Other than the animals, of course. But one of my friends turned into ashes when we were very little. A pile of girl-shaped ashes. The other has gone missing, and I don't know if he'll ever come back.
A shudder ripped through her, so strong she nearly dropped the box. With goosebumps all around her arms, she set the box on the floor between them and picked mindlessly at her dress.
But I asked the stars to send a sign that he was all right, and they sent me a shooting star across the sky. The next day was a trial like any trial, except the earthen girl standing before me had hair like a shooting star, and you'd seen him.
Do you ever make sense?
The girl pressed her hands onto the ground and leaned forward until her nose was almost touching Scarlet's. Scarlet refused to pull away, though her brain hitched.
Was he all right? When you saw him last? Sybil said he was still alive, that he may have been used to pilot that ship, but she didn't say if he'd been injured. Do you think he's safe?
I don't know what you're...
The girl pressed her fingertips against Scarlet's mouth.
Jason. Clay, she whispered. Sybil's guard, with the blonde hair and beautiful eyes and the rising sun in his smile. Please, tell me he's all right.
Scarlet blinked. The girl's fingers were still in her mouth, but it didn't matter. She was too baffled to speak. The battle aboard the Rampion was mostly a blur of screaming and gunshots in her memory, and her focus had been on the Thaumaturge then. But she did vaguely recall another person there, a blonde-haired guard.
But the rising sun in his smile? Please.
She sneered.
I remember two people trying to kill me, and my friends.
Yes, and Jason was one of them,
she said, evidently unconcerned with the whole killing part of Scarlet's statement.
I guess so. There was a blonde guard.
Glee spread over the girl's face. The look had the power to stop hearts and brighten rooms, but not to Scarlet.
And how did he look?
He looked like he was trying to kill me, but I'm sure my friends killed him first. That's usually what we do to people who work for your queen.
The smile vanished and the girl shriveled away, tying her arms around her waist.
You don't mean that.
I do, and believe me, he deserved it.
The girl was beginning to shake now, like she was on the verge of hyperventilating. Scarlet decided without much guilt that if that happened, she wouldn't do a thing about it. She wouldn't try to help her. She wouldn't call for the guard. This stranger was no friend. Across the aisle, the wolf had climbed onto all fours and was pawing at the base of his enclosure. He began to whimper. After a few moments, the girl managed to get herself under control. Sliding the lid back onto the candies, she settled them into her basket and stood, hunching in the small cage.
"I see," she said. "That will conclude this visit. I prescribe adequate rest and..."
She sobbed and turned away, but paused before she could call for the guard. Slowly, stiffly, she turned back.
"I wasn't lying about the walls that bleed. Someday soon, I fear the palace will be soaked through with blood, and all of Artemisia Lake will be so red, even the earthens will be able to see it."
"I'm not interested in your delusions." A sharp, unexpected pain shot up through the arm that Scarlet was using to support herself, and she crumpled to the ground, waiting for the pinpricks of pain to fade. She glared up at the girl, angry at how weak and vulnerable she was, angry at the flash of a concern in the girl's eyes that seemed so honest. She snarled up at her. "And I don't care for your mock sympathy either. Your glamour, your mind control, you people have built your entire culture on lies, and I want nothing to do with it."
The girl stared at her for so long, Scarlet began to wish she hadn't said anything. But keeping her mouth shut had never been a great talent of hers. Then, finally, the girl tapped her knuckles against the bars. As the guard's footsteps padded down the pathway, she reached into the basket and retrieved the box again. She set it down at Scarlet's side, tucking it beside her so the guard wouldn't see.
"I haven't used my glamour since I was 12 years old,"
she whispered, gaze piercing, as if it were very important to her that Scarlet understand this.
"Not since I was old enough to control it. That's why the visions come to me. That's why I'm going mad."
Behind her, the bolts of the cage door clunked open.
"Your Highness."
She swiveled on her toes and ducked out of the cage, her head lowered so that her thick hair hid both her beauty and her scars. "Your Highness." Stunned, Scarlet lay on the ground until her tongue began to turn to chalk from thirst. As far as she knew, there was only one Lunar Princess. Other than Cinder, of course. Princess Winter, the Queen's stepdaughter. The unspeakable beauty. The scars that, according to rumor, had been inflicted by the Queen herself. When she glanced back toward the wolf's cage, Ryu had wandered away, toward the back of his enclosure. He had been given much more space to prowl than Scarlet, perhaps a quarter of an acre of dirt and grass, trees, and a fake fallen log that formed a quaint little den. Sighing, Scarlet looked back up at the glass ceiling, where she could see black sky and countless stars between the tree branches. Her stomach panged, a reminder that her one small meal had been devoured hours ago, and, unlike Ryu and the white stag that had lived in an enclosure farther down the aisle, and the albino peacock that sometimes wandered freely between them, Scarlet wouldn't get another meal until tomorrow. It took a long time of battling her weakened willpower, feeling the weight of the candies beside her. She had no reason to trust that girl. She didn't trust that girl. But after her stomach had begun to ache from hollowness and her head to spin with hunger, she gave up and pulled the lid off the box. She pulled out one of the candies. It was glass smooth beneath her teeth. The outer shell cracked easily, giving way to a warm, melty center that burst sweet and sour on her tongue. She moaned and let her head fall onto the hard floor. Nothing. Not even her grandmother's prized tomatoes had ever tasted so good. But then, as she was working her tongue around her gums, searching out any missed bits of the candy, a tingling began to warm her throat. It expanded outward, into her chest, and through her abdomen and along her limbs, all the way to her missing finger, leaving a trail of comfort in its wake. When it was gone, Scarlet realized that it had taken her pain with it. Chapter 59. It was like being drawn slowly from the serene darkness, the way one wakes up when they've been having a lovely dream and their subconscious is struggling to hold them there, just a little while longer. Then, with angry resignation, Kai was awake, his eyes wide open and staring up at unfamiliar